We're joined today by China Africa CEO Paul Johnson. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Alex. How are you?
I'm very good. It's been a little while since we've spoke to each other.
It has, yeah, but you've been stuck on a rig somewhere, haven't you, out near Belgium?
I have, actually. I've just done 5 weeks. That's why I've been a bit quiet. But I just want to pick up on China Africa. Can you just give us a bit of background to the company, please?
Yes, of course, no problem. Well, China Africa has been on the market for quite a few years. They were trying to develop a Namibian mine. The company was a bit moribund because 90% of the shares were owned by two shareholders. And in recent years, financing has been difficult and they weren't able to push things forward very rapidly. So a decision was taken last year to spin the assets in Namibia out to the existing shareholders. And we came along and offered to raise some money and keep the business alive on AIM as China Africa Resources, but as a Rule 15 cash shell. So in December, mid-December, there was a general meeting. Shareholders approved a distribution of the Namibian asset, which was held through a Namibian company, to the then shareholders. We raised £1 million for the company. Turned it into a Rule 15 cash shell following the completion of the administration and distribution process for the Namibian interests. And now we're focused on energy, metals and minerals and undertaking within 6 months a reverse takeover of an energy, metals and minerals asset.
I've seen the Rule 15 cash shell. Just reading your past statements, it says a circular of the 21st of November, 2016. So how does that affect you? How will investors understand that?
Well, basically, from the point at which the assets are distributed and the company changes into a Rule 15 cash shell. So in effect, we have 6 months from the distribution to effect a reverse takeover. The investing companies have long been on AIM. They've been designated as Rule 15, but they used to have 12 months to implement their investing policy. The problem was you had management teams that were doing precious little to develop the business. Yeah. And the exchange, quite rightly, was frustrated with management teams sat there paying themselves money and not doing very much to push the businesses forward. So they said, well, we're getting rid of that classification, as it were, or that description of a Rule 15 company. We're going to call them, instead of investing companies, cash shells. And we're going to reduce the period of time they have to do a reverse takeover transaction to 6 months from 12 months. It means that you have to act very efficiently and promptly. You can't hang around. It's just enough time, you know, for people who are reasonably efficient to do a comfortable transaction. And we're absolutely comfortable with what the exchange has done. We entirely agree with the fact that these moribund, dull investing companies run by people who have no real interest in pushing the business forward were definitely not in the interest of the exchange. This new structure, time pressures, of course, it brings to bear on you, make things more challenging, and you have to really crack on. But we think it's a much better structure, so we're happy and comfortable with it.
Obviously, the only reason I'm asking you that question, because in 2016, I think a lot of retail investors had a few, how would you say, bad incidents with cash shells. So what would you say is different from you guys? You say you have £1 million in the bank.
Yeah. We raised £1 million in December to enable us to do what we needed to do. The reverse takeover process requires, obviously, the identification of various assets, the due diligence and investigation of those potential interests, and then you have to go through a process of acquisition and publication of documents, general meetings, and that kind of thing. There is a risk with any cash shell, a Rule 15 cash shell, that they may not be able to complete their acquisition in time. We've obviously laid out a mandate saying that we want to complete it in time, and we're doing everything we can to make sure that happens. We're not restricted to solely undertaking a reverse takeover transactions. However, we can do other things as well, as long as they don't breach what are called the class tests and become a reverse takeover transaction themselves. So we can take positions, invest in things, and look at different opportunities along the way. I would say the principal risk that you have as a Rule 15 cash shell, looking from an investor perspective, is that you don't finish on time. And I can fully understand the frustrations of investors in the market with previous cash shells that have failed to meet their deadlines. In addition, it's worth noting that the process that you go through with regard to a reverse takeover is quite complex, can take some time, it's not an easy process to complete. So I have some sympathy for previous shells that haven't been able to perform. However, I do feel that in general, it's up to the incumbent management to do their level best to make sure everything happens on schedule.
We've spoke on a few occasions.
Yeah.
And I'm saying for CAF now, how upbeat are you? How positive are you going into 2017?
Oh, no, very, very much so. I think the availability of assets in the energy metals and mineral space is significant. We've had a long downturn in the sector. The pricing of the commodities has been under pressure for quite some time. Many of them are starting to recover now, but still the lingering negative sentiment still impacts share prices of junior resource companies, impacts financing of resource companies, and therefore impacts the ability of project vendors to actually do deals. We've always been in the businesses that I've undertaken, we've always taken a view of offering fair compensation to vendors on reasonable terms. So we're not out to skin anybody alive. But what we're absolutely keen to do is make sure that any acquisitions that we make are high potential acquisitions, so that the investors in our stock can make a considerable amount of money if we're successful. Looking at the project mix that we have in front of us, we've announced to market that we are looking at a dozen different things, obviously some more advanced than others. I think we've got a phenomenal opportunity to make a real difference and build the capital value of our company so that people get a good return. We have to go through, obviously, the usual processes as a cash shell to make sure that we come back on market, but our focus is to come back as an operating company so that we can actually take on projects. We can own the majority or all of the projects, and we can actually control, guide, direct the work on the ground. So by the middle of this year, which is obviously around the deadline date for our transaction, we hope that we're not only a full operating company on the AIM market, but we also hope that we have one or more significant projects in our portfolio that can make a considerable difference to shareholders' portfolios.
What you're saying there is reading between the lines, and obviously I know you guys, it's sensitive information and you only put out what's on RNSs and in the markets. You could be targeting more than one asset.
Yeah, we've actually put within the RNS that we're taking a reasonably diversified
scale,
view.
Yeah.
The reason is that if you put all your eggs in one basket with a single asset, then you can be quite exposed as a company if things don't quite go according to plan. Now, if you can diversify by commodity, by geography, then you protect yourself from both the economic cycle and the pricing of commodities, and also any local geopolitical risk that you might face in any one particular country. Although it has to be said right now, there are many projects available in perfectly safe and reasonable jurisdictions on reasonable terms. So in fairness, I think you can largely negate the majority of the geopolitical risk. Commodity risk you can never really control, of course, but if you have a two or three projects across commodity spectrum or across the energy metals and mineral space, then you have some degree of inbuilt protection. For example, in recent times, the price of lithium has been falling a little bit, but the price of cobalt has been rising because the shift into a cobalt focus has been quite something. Now, of course, the problem is what we're you have to be forward looking rather than just looking backwards. So we think that provided we have a reasonable spread across different commodity groups then and across different geographic areas, we give ourselves optimum protection and the best chance for the investor base to make a material return.
Spread your RNSs, so you're targeting, you've got like your list is uranium, lithium, cobalt, copper, coal. So like you say, effectively, it's all the energy metals and the minerals involved in power generation, power distribution, power storage. That's what you're targeting.
Yeah, well, we figured that the world needs power. And we also figured that the AIM market itself didn't really have a tremendous array of opportunities for people to invest, in specifically in this group of commodities. So, for example, uranium is the ultimate turnaround opportunity. We've seen a real shock environment since the 2011 Fukushima disaster in March 11.
Yeah, definitely.
That really pulled the price of the commodity back. But it's been starting to recover recently. Maybe it's a false dawn, but it looks like it might be on the cusp of doing something reasonably interesting. But past experience tells us when uranium starts to become in vogue again, the prices of uranium companies really do rise tremendously. And we've seen quite a few Canadian uranium plays really start to increase in price of late. So maybe it's the start of something. Lithium's had a pullback commodity-wise recently, but in fairness, if you look at the lithium market, lithium junior resource companies, there are lots on the TSX and ASX. But in the UK, there's not that much. So when you have a few companies engaged with lithium, there seems to be a very major reaction to it. It's almost as if the UK market's yearning, one or two extra lithium plays to actually engage with. If you look at cobalt's the partner to lithium in batteries. It helps to stabilize the lithium batteries. There's been a few issues with lithium batteries exploding and so on. So there's an expectation going forward that there'll be more demand on cobalt. The price has risen quite a bit of late, and it seems to be the slightly hidden but potentially major opportunity going forward. Copper is rising in 2016 quite considerably. A few companies, one of them quite close to my recent past, has been finding some interesting copper discoveries, and it's made a dramatic difference to the valuation of the companies. There are copper opportunities out there. If you get the right one, then you can inspire investors, and there's a real growing interest in investing in decent copper plays. Coal is quite a unique environment. After years of everyone hating coal and thinking it was coming to the end of its life, full stop, as a sensible commodity, the price dramatically increased in 2016, and there's now a resurgence of interest in the sector. Of course, the American coal assets and good old Regency Mines has just acquired one of those. If you get them in the right area, the supply demand situation is fabulous. The overall geopolitical environment is favorable under Trump, and there are opportunities aplenty at the moment. So yeah, coal's another interesting one. We kind of spoke for choice, in fairness, and we have a number of interests across a number of geographies in pretty much all of those commodities that we've just discussed. So we've got to pick sensibly and carefully. We need to engage with the right things early on, because the initial acquisitions that we take will form the bedrock and foundation of our business, and we've got to get that right.
You seem to be entering the markets at a time when you said, likes of uranium, it's turning around. You've got lithium, it's quite sexy now. Cobalt's obviously the mobile phones, etc. So you could be in a good place right now, to be honest.
Yeah, we think we are. I mean, timing is quite key, and you very rarely get the absolute bottom of any market or any stock, and you very rarely get the absolute top. But we think we're in a good space. We think there is not a dearth as such, but few opportunities of this nature on the AIM market for people to invest. But this is not a traditional company, as none of the companies that I end up involved with are. We will be driven all the way through the process to do our best for shareholders. The only way this thing works as an investor is if you're able to invest your money and make a really decent return. Now, no one can budget for exploration risk in the sense that geologically something might look promising but not deliver. Yeah, but in terms of business administration, in terms of raising money at fair prices, looking after your existing shareholders, running a reasonable, decent business, then we can do that. And that's what we've done in the past. That's what I did with Metal Tiger. And that philosophy for looking after the current shareholders will continue to apply in China Africa Resources, or whatever name it takes in due course, should that change. We're very excited. We want to employ the same principles in this business as have been done in the past successfully, and make sure we deliver for shareholders. There has been a little bit of a time lag, Alex, because we've done when you take over any company, as we did in mid-December, just before Christmas, you've got to deal with certain administration matters and get everything in order, and that takes a bit of time. And people have seen some of that progress in market announcements, the change of advisors, the general business updates, and this kind of thing. What we really want to do is make sure we get some project-related, investment-related news out to market, so that people can start to see the kind of things that we are looking at and the kind of work that we've been doing in the background. We haven't sat here just doing filing for the last month or so. We've been looking proactively across quite a few different opportunities and furthering the ones that we think have the best potential for our shareholders. And as soon as we get to a point of crystallization, we're going to let everybody know through market news announcements.
Well, that's why ShareTalk likes engaging with you, Paul, because you do engage with shareholders, and that we like companies that do that, that keep in touch with the people who actually pay the wages and support the company.
Yeah, they do. That's exactly right. I mean, in fairness, the wages are not particularly high, as outlined within the within the RNS for the December meeting. The four directors of the company are on fixed 25k, 50%, minimum 50% of which was taken in stock. So there isn't a massive outgoing for directors, but we are working them quite hard. And we have been relatively quiet on the market in terms of market news flow and media work, because we've been literally very busy, and it's prevented us from having too much free time to start talking. And of course, The reality is you can sound a bit vacuous if you don't have much to talk about. So really, it's good to speak to you today just to let everybody know that things are moving forward, we are making progress, and we are doing an awful lot of work in the background. And hopefully that work can come to the fore in terms of market news announcements in the not-too-distant future.
I'm sure your current shareholders and also people who are unaware of the company listening to this today, it'll, it puts the message across for you. And would you keep in touch if we can do maybe a Q&A in the future when you have some news or another interview?
Yeah, of course. I would love to do that. And we will be talking as we start to do things. We will be talking more about them. Because obviously you have your news announcements that go out to market. And it's always good to chat generally around things and answer people's questions. Obviously, we can't do anything that's that would breach market rules in terms of price sensitive matters not disclosed, and so on, but as much as we're able to, we will quite happily talk around what we're doing.
Now we're in Farnborough. That seems a long way to go for a video interview.
you're always welcome in Farnborough.
I better get the sat nav out first, what I mean?
we've got all the details of the office, where it is on the website. If anyone wants to visit and come and have a look, then they're welcome. Anyone wants to call or email, info@chinaafricares.com, or pick up the phone and give us a ring. Happy to speak to any shareholders, again, subject to obvious market rules in terms of information release. We've got the Twitter feed, I think it's at China Africa Res, so people can see stuff that we put out on Twitter. We will be attending various shows and doing various presentations. We've got one on Saturday.
Yeah, man, I may have again.
That we're doing, yeah, up in the West Midlands. So the kind of standard philosophy of making sure we communicate with the investors continues. It's a great time to be in the resource market. There's a lot that you can do. As we learned with the project in Metal Tiger, the copper project that we got involved with there, then tremendous things can come from exploration opportunities, and look forward to bringing a few ideas and investments and potential acquisitions to the market's attention in the not too distant future.
Paul, it's always a pleasure. Thanks very much for taking your time to speak to your shareholders that are here today, and hopefully we can catch up in the near future.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Alex.
All right. Cheers, Paul.